Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes with you every Saturday afternoon here on News Talk 580 KMJ and online at kmjnow.com. If you listen to last week's program with Baseball Hall of Famer Monty Irvin, you heard me mention at the end that we would have another guest this week who also had a connection to the shot heard around the world, which tomorrow will celebrate the 59th anniversary of Bobby Thompson's famous home run, lifting the New York Giants to the pennant after trailing the Brooklyn Dodgers by 13 and a half games. So today's guest also has a connection to Bobby Thompson right here in the San Joaquin Valley. And today's guest is also a Hall of Famer, not the Baseball Hall of Fame, but the International Softball Congress Hall of Fame. And he's been in that body since 1973. Al Cutrazula, or Al Cotti, as he's known here in Hanford, California. Now, there's a story in itself that we're going to get to about how you have two very different Italian names. But let's start out before that. When you were just Al Cutrazula in Pennsylvania, you grew up around Pittsburgh or a small town or where?
In the East Liberty section of Pittsburgh. They have divided into different areas of the city itself.
Well, you're 88 years old, so if I do the math and take you back to 1941, you weren't quite 20 years old yet, I suppose.
That's right.
December 7th, 1941 is a date I ask everybody about. Everybody has a unique story who was alive then about where they were, how they found out about Pearl Harbor. And you're already laughing before I even ask the question. Is this an embarrassing answer you're going to give me about where you were on December 7th and how you found out?
Well, it might not be. It might be for the young folks, but we were out shooting dice in the back of an alley about that time.
In other words, you're up to no good.
No good, no good, no good. You know, it was a day that I guess you put me on a spot by asking me where I was, and I wanted to tell you the truth anyway. But not a glorious day. It was a sad day for everybody involved in World War II.
I mean, when you heard that, there had to be some shock value there, right? What did that mean to you when you heard, you probably never heard of Pearl Harbor before, but that you heard the United States had been attacked?
Yes, the way it was done, it was shocking too. You know, we lost a lot of good young men and came unexpectedly, you know, and it was a sad day, sad day.
Did you have an inkling at that moment that piece of news might affect your life and change the course of your life?
At the time, I didn't think that much of it, but as the days came along, you know, it bound to have something where I was going to be involved in sooner or later. I had a younger and an older brother who eventually would be called due through the draft numbers, but I was involved in going to school at the time as an apprentice in tool and die making, and consequently ended up in a defense plant before I enlisted in the Air Corps.
Well, and most times on this show, I talk to guys who are in one of the branches of service, whether it's the Air Corps, the Army, the Navy, the Marine Corps, the Coast Guard, and we don't talk a lot about what people at home were doing for the war effort. So you got a taste of both of those things, working in a defense plant before you're actually in the service. Did you get the sense that the people that were there with you felt that same kind of purpose, duty, devotion to the cause that those in uniform did? We don't get that perspective often. What kind of taste of that motivation of just the people at home during the war did you get?
I'm sure they had the same feeling that I had. I had two brothers in, and we were all working for the same goal, getting it over as soon as we can. And the people that I work with, they were a lot older. I happen to be a lot younger than most of them, but they did their share. More like me, it was just all new to me, and they were the ones who were teaching me too along the way. So whatever they were thinking, and they were trying to impress on me to do the same thing too, you know.
And before we talk about what you did yourself, I'm curious too, with your brothers being overseas, how often did you hear from them, and was it hard for you to have them across the world and you there in Pittsburgh?
Well, I never did make contact with them at all while they were in the service, but through one of my younger brothers, he whatever he would hear or get pictures or whatever he was told, well, he would relay all the stuff to me, and that's the only way I got to know what they were doing too.
And then eventually you kind of got tired of being the one who wasn't doing something in terms of being in uniform. What motivated you to sign up? Because you didn't have to. They didn't draft you. You had to sign up yourself.
Well, in the neighborhood, you know, we were a much integrated neighborhood, and all the young fellows that were my age were mostly all in the service, you know, and consequently, every time I'd go out, and somebody would say, "Well, how are you getting staying out of the service? You know, how are you getting away with staying out of the service?" Well, I tell them, "Well, I was. They didn't draft me. Matter of fact, they gave me deferments. They gave me two deferments in order to keep me where I was. But I decided, well, and they were all my friends were all gone. It was time for me to sign up too."
You probably got tired of people asking you that, right?
Could be.
So you just, one day, you felt like going down to the office and signing up?
Yes, I went right straight from work one day and went downtown post office in Pittsburgh and signed up. And it was a matter of a week, I was gone. I was inducted.
And you signed up with the Army Air Corps? You wanted to be a pilot?
Well, that was what I signed up for. Actually, I never did any flying at all, and what made me join the Air Corps, I don't know, but I said, well, I might as well take a shot and go. So, as it turned out, well, it was a good move, but I didn't attain the goal of getting in any flying at all, with the exception of one trip I took in the Air Corps flying, and that was my first trip that I had ever had in an airplane down in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Well, we're going to get to that, but you know, you're not alone in signing up to be a pilot and ending up not being a pilot. There are a lot of guys that happen to, and the reason you didn't get to is because you're too busy playing sports. And as someone who I've been told so many times, quit playing basketball, you're going to hurt yourself. I guess someone could have told you that, and it might have changed things for you. You hurt yourself playing basketball?
Well, I did. While they sent me up to college training detachment, I was playing basketball, and we had a collision, and I woke up the next morning with drainage out of my ear, my left ear, and found out I had a perforated eardrum, so that took care of any flying at all whatsoever.
You ever think back to that and wonder how things might have been different if you hadn't ruptured that eardrum?
Well, it's hard to say. Well, we wouldn't know. We don't know what would have happened to us. I might not have been here. I might not be here today talking to you. If I would have became a pilot or a gunner or whatever.
Well, that's exactly what I was thinking. It's funny how somebody always has a better plan for us, and you probably never would have met your wife or had your three children, your grandchildren. But that's what happened to you. So you didn't get to fly, but you were still in the Army Air Corps. And what did they do with you?
They shipped me to Keesler Field down in Mississippi, where I stayed there about five weeks. And then our outfit got transferred to Hammer Field in Fresno in 1944.
So here you are, Italian boy from Pittsburgh, coming out to Fresno, California. Was it a different world for you?
Oh, I never seen such a beautiful place to come to at that time. I never saw so many palm trees and sunshine. Yeah, it was beautiful. I really enjoyed my stay, how short it was, though, in Fresno.
And you have always been someone to pursue athletics. I get that feel about you. If there's something competitive, you're going to do it. You've bowled three 300-game games. You're a softball Hall of Famer. There's probably some holes in one somewhere along there. You can tell me if that's the case. But at Hammer Field, you decided to play some softball, and they had a pretty famous team at the time.
Yes, they had the Hammerfield Raiders. They had a great softball team. They had won the World's ASA, Amateur Softball Association, World Tournament that year. I tried out for them while I was there. First thing I used to do when I used to transfer to anywhere, I always would find out where the gymnasium was, that's all. Because I was more inclined to play basketball. I enjoyed basketball more than any of my other sports. But getting back to Hammer Field there, they had a tryout, and I tried out for the team and played one game with them. And then once again, our old outfit got transferred again to to Lemoore Army Air Force Base. Eventually, though, one of the guys that was pitching for Hammerfield was Kermit Lynch. And it has luck would have it, he wound up managing the Hanford team in 1948. And that's when I met him again.
Sure, your paths would cross again. So they took you from Fresno and they shipped you to Lemoore. Your first taste of Kings County. I bet back then you didn't realize that you'd be spending more than half your life in Kings County.
No, at the time, no. Matter of fact, I was asked by one of the business merchants in Hanford when I was playing softball in the city league there if I would ever think about coming back to Hanford to play for their town team. His name was Leo Togneri, and he had a cleaning and drying establishment right on Main Street there. As luck would have it again, I came back. So
we're going to get that whole story. So they send you to Lemoore. And for folks who know the Central Valley now, they know that Lemoore Naval Air Station is there, and they hear all the Hornets flying overhead. What was Lemoore Air Force Base like back in the 1940s?
Well, it was just like every other base I went to. You got barracks, and you got other buildings where they do their administrative work, and I can't picture anything else other than barracks and administration buildings and the airfield. That's about it.
You know what Lemoore's like today because you live just a few miles from it. Was it a lot smaller back then as far as what else was there around the base?
Oh, that's all that was there. Now all everything around the base looked like to me was jackrabbit country, you know. So it was a dreary-looking place for a while there. But the first thing I noticed when I arrived there was the water. Something that tasted like rotten eggs to me, you know. I don't know whether that, I forgot what they usually used to say that was in the water that really reminded them of.
Sulfur or something, maybe?
Yeah, that's sulfur. That had that sulfur taste to it.
So that was your first impression of Lemoore. Maybe that's how they got the yellow in their purple and yellow uniforms from the sulfur. But there was much more to come in Lemoore and the rest of his time in the service, including his connection to Bobby Thompson, who we met in Lemoore. We're going to get that story from 88-year-old Al Cotrizzula, or Al Cotty, if you know him, in Hanford. We'll be back with more of Hometown Heroes after this. It's News Talk 580 KMJ.
This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty on 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. My guest today, 88-year-old Al Cotrizzula, or Al Cotty, if you know him in Hanford. And we're going to get the story of how he got that name while he was serving in the Army Air Corps during World War II. Never made it overseas, but he's got some pretty interesting stories, including his connection to the famous home run that happened 59 years ago tomorrow, October 3rd of 1951, the shot heard around the world, Bobby Thompson. Did you have any idea that Bobby Thompson spent some time here in the San Joaquin Valley, that he was stationed in Lemoore in the Army Air Corps? Well, Al knows that because Al was here. But Al, first, why don't you tell me how your name got changed? Cotrizzula sounds like a beautiful Italian name to me. How did that get shortened to just five letters?
Well, I was playing softball for a base team, not the base team, but the guard squadron. And I was in the administrative end of it, but they were MPs. When our manager turned in the lineup to the scorekeeper, and he saw my long name, and he decided to shorten it on his own. I didn't give him any permission or anything. And the next thing I knew, it was it hung on me, and that was it. And but I told him, make sure that you put an I on the back of that Cotty, because there are a lot of Portuguese in that area that go by Cotta. So I wanted to make a distinguish between both of us, by kind of our nationalities.
So for over 60 years in Kings County, you've been Al Cotty, right? That's how everybody knows you.
That's it. When my children were growing up, people would ask them. I didn't know Al Cotty was your dad. You know, they only knew him as Cotrizzula. I said, so that was kind of funny.
Well, it's very big of you to let everybody call you what they wanted to call you instead of insisting on your name. But to the Army, I suppose you were still Cotrizzula. And besides your athletic exploits, which we'll talk about, what kind of duties did you have in Lemoore with the Army Air Corps?
Well, I'd worked mainly in administration, working in shipping and receiving, but other duties that I had at other stations. I worked as in recreation, checking out sporting equipment for people that come in and want to go play basketball. They'd have to check out a basketball or softball or whatever sports equipment.
Right up your alley, huh?
Yep, just right up there. That's my line.
No pun intended for a guy who spent a lot of time in bowling alleys. It has 300 games to his credit. So you're working on the base. I know you had wanted to be a pilot. The eardrum thing happened. Was it hard for you to be here and know that your brothers were overseas, that so many millions of Americans were overseas? Was that something that you were thankful that you were here, or you kind of wished you had a chance to go over there and do something else?
I didn't know the dangers they were in, but whatever they were doing, I was just hoping and praying that they would make it all right. And sometimes we get content with things the way we are doing. We don't think about what the other fellows are really going through that are a lot tougher than what I was doing.
You were content, though, to be in Lemoore and playing every sport you could find.
I had to do what I did in order to pass time and hope for the best, that's all.
So you played a lot of softball, and the base also had a baseball team, right?
Yeah, they had a baseball team, too, yeah. We played in the Fresno League, part of 44, and I think Bobby Thompson, he played for another team in Porterville during that same period while he was stationed here. They have that night league up there. I don't remember I think it was Ratcliffe Stadium where they used to play their baseball games there. I'm not sure, and I forgot.
Or maybe Euless Park even back then. You can bring up the name Bobby Thompson, and this is something that I think younger folks like me, unless they've done some studying, they probably are unaware. If you think of today, we've got two wars going on in Iraq and Afghanistan, and I don't think anyone could imagine an Alex Rodriguez or a Derek Jeter or someone going overseas to fight. But in the 1940s, you had just about everybody. Last week we had Monty Irvin on the program. He was there. Ted Williams was there. Yogi Berra. The list goes on and on. Bobby Thompson wasn't a household name yet. It was years before he would hit that shot heard around the world. What was your first impression of this Scotsman who was out there swinging the bat with you?
Well, you knew he had to play some baseball somewhere because the movements that he had. You knew that somebody had already signed him up. He probably had already been signed up and been in the minor league before he went into the service.
Indeed, he had. He was actually signed by the Giants out of high school. He went to Curtis High School in Staten Island, New York. The Giants signed him, and he played briefly in their minor league system before he was drafted into the Army Air Corps. I'm curious, he's a big guy at 6'2", 185 pounds, pretty big by that day's standards. Was there someone he reminded you of? What did he look like out there on the field?
He reminded me, when he played shortstop, he reminded me of old tall, lanky Marty Marion. He used to play for the St. Louis Cardinals, you know. You don't see too many big, tall guys playing shortstop. You know, you picture them in the outfield somewhere, but he roamed just like an antelope, you know, just smooth. It was amazing to watch him. But the thing I liked about him was the fact that he didn't let himself be known as a hot shot. He's just one of the guys, you know, and he was there to enjoy himself as much as we could, you know. That's all I can say.
You said that you could tell he had played before. Did any of you have any kind of inkling that maybe he would go on to the kind of stardom he eventually enjoyed, or did he just seem like he was the same as the rest of you?
Well, he just seemed like he was the rest of us, but I never heard him mention once who he was who had signed him or where he had played or anything, you know. Of course, he being an officer, and I was just a corporal at the time, we didn't associate together at all, only when we were playing ball, you know. He was about the best I could ever imagine, the way he talked and the way he held himself, too.
So he was playing shortstop. Where were you playing?
I was playing in right field. Not a very good right fielder, but I played right field.
I know you still have some box scores from these games way back when for the Lemoore Air Base baseball team. Was there any moment you remember, the play that he made or something that you guys accomplished as a team that was meaningful to you at the time?
Well, the only thing I can remember is the way he batted one game. You start off with a single, then he started, the next one was a triple, and the next one was a home run. And it was, and once the ball hit the bat, you knew it was gone, you know. So he was that type of a player. He put the wood on the ball.
So here you are in Lemoore, and you're at this time you have no idea who this guy is, and there's still a war going on. What was the rest of your time in the service during World War II? How did you spend that? And was there anything that stood out as far as hearing word of a major moment in the war, or the war is over, or anything in the rest of your time in the Army Air Corps in World War II that was meaningful to you?
Well, the first inkling I got of about the way the war was going is I was going home on a furlough, and when the bomb went off in Hiroshima.
Hiroshima and then Nagasaki, right?
And then that seemed like that was the turning point of the war. And when I got home, I was still home when they signed the peace treaty in Japan, the war was over. All hell broke loose in downtown Pittsburgh and in our neighborhood. Everybody was carrying flags and honking horns, and you could see how the people were really happy that one phase of the war was over there.
I bet that was exciting for you.
Oh yes, that was the end of the war, 45. Boys were coming home, and they had by the amount of points that they had overseas and the time served, and being I worked in shipping and receiving there, I seen all of them coming back, and they were. You could see the happiness on their faces, and the way the attitude and the way they were carrying themselves, and I decided I didn't have very many points because I was in stateside all the time, and you only got one point for each month, and I think the overseas boys they got double the amount of points. I decided I better do something. Probably I was figuring maybe I might get shipped overseas myself, so I decided, well, if I sign up for a year, I know I'll be back home anyway in 1 year, but if I wouldn't have, I might have been on because emergency was still on even though the war was over.
No one knew if that was going to last.
Yeah, well, that's right. So I took the fatal, not the fatal step, but I they say that when you get married sometimes.
Well, we'll get to that later. Hey, I am curious about your brothers and if they made it home okay. And when you talk about seeing guys come back, one of the things that so many veterans share with me is as being one of the most challenging things of their experiences when they were overseas, seeing their friends die, seeing guys not come home. Were you, for the most part, spared that experience because you were stateside, or were you still touched in that way by knowing people who didn't come back?
Well, yeah. Well, I consider myself fortunate that I survived, and I feel sorry for the families of the boys that didn't make it. But
you didn't have a whole lot of close friends who didn't come home, probably. Most of your friends were probably okay?
Well, yeah, most of my friends, there was just one or two that I remember that didn't make it, but most of my boys' friends came back.
And your brothers both made it back?
They made it back okay, yeah.
So you had been out here in California, and you go back home to Pittsburgh. Did you have to come back before you were discharged, or you never were discharged because you signed up again?
I was already discharged, and they gave me 90 days leave. I stayed here in Hanford and worked a couple of months at, they had an old ice house where they made blocks of ice and what have you. And a friend of mine, a close friend of mine, Ray Felix, he worked there, got me the job of working with him. And it wasn't very much money, but it was enough to pay for my room and board here. After 2 months, I went home for the third month. I got to play basketball. I was home. They still, you know, they still had their base basketball. They call it the Friendship Club. And I played a game there while I was home on leave. Then I had to report to Fort Meade, Maryland, on January 7, 1946. From there, I was shipped down to Greensboro, North Carolina again, where I took my original basic training.
And this is where you actually got to fly for the first time?
Yeah. Well, that, while I was there, I went to the gym, the first thing, got to playing basketball, and next thing I know, the coach for the base team come over and asked me if I'd like to try out for the basketball team, which I did, and I made the team, and I worked in the recreation office while I was there. We had won the North and South Carolina AAU tournament basketball, and we beat the Camp Lejeune, I think it was down in North Carolina, and that was my first airplane trip. We flew to Denver, Colorado for the National AAU tournament. And while we were flying there, I would have made a heck of a pilot. I was sick. We were flying in an old C-47, I think it was. Yeah. And my stomach was upset. And the two of the guys that were pilots, they played on the team. So they said, come on up in front here and see if you settle your stomach. That didn't help a bit. So they just gave me a bag and sent me to the back of the plane. And I flipped my cookies.
So that was evidence enough that God knew what he was doing when he stopped you from being a pilot, huh?
Evidently.
So your one flight in the Army Air Corps was for a basketball tournament, and you learned your lesson. That's a good story in itself. So I guess the question I imagine everybody at home is asking, and we're going to hear more about Bobby Thompson, but the question is, how did you end up back in Central California? So I'm going to have you answer that when we come back. Al Cutrazula, or Al Cotti, of Hanford, California, our guest today, back with the rest of Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.
On the front line of freedom, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. For the second week in a row, we talk a little sports in addition to World War II. Our guest today, Al Cutrazula, 88 years old of Hanford, California, served in the Army Air Corps in World War II, never made it overseas. It's not too often that we hear stories like that on this program, but with so many people involved in the war effort, I think it's just as important to recognize those who are doing their best at home and not necessarily in Japan or Europe or China, Burma, India, or anywhere on the war front during World War II. Al spent his time in the service. He signed up again after the war, and it was after the war that he met up again with his old baseball teammate. You had played at Lemoore Air Base with Bobby Thompson on that baseball team. And then he made it to the big leagues after the war, and you caught wind of it. How did you reconnect with your old Air Force teammate?
When I got discharged in January of 47, baseball season, the Giants were playing in Pittsburgh. And a friend of mine and I, we took a trip down into what did we call the Oakland area where Forbes Field is located. And they were staying at the Schenley Hotel. And I went to the hotel and asked if I could see Bobby Thompson. So he and Buddy Kerr was the second baseman at the time. They were coming down the hall, and that's the first time I'd saw him since we last met at Lemoore Army Air Force Base. Our conversation didn't last very long because they had to be somewhere. They might have had an interview or something, but he did leave a couple of tickets for us for the game that particular night, and lo and behold, what happened, we got rained out. So that was my last connection that I had with him in person until...
Not to interrupt, but I'm curious what that was like. I mean, I'm sure it must have been exciting to have this teammate of yours who's now playing in the major leagues, which this was before television is everywhere. You certainly have radio broadcasts, but you read that newspaper, and Major League Baseball was pretty much the biggest thing around, right? A little different probably than it is today.
Well, just like the little kid come out in me, like when I used to idolize the Musials and Hank Aaron years ago, and I was kind of stunned, and I was glad for him, and I knew someday he probably would be where he was at that time anyway. But it was a pleasant meeting.
But the game was rained out, so you didn't get to see him play. until you end up back in California again. And that's an interesting story in itself. How does a Pittsburgh boy who goes out to California during the war but then moves back home to Pittsburgh end up back in California?
I was playing softball for a team called the Pittsburgh Ralphs in 1947. And we had won our regional tournament there, and we're going to the World's Tournament in Cleveland, Ohio. And consequently, who was there, or it was a surprise, was a team from Hanford, California. And I went down to where they were hanging out, all the ball players, and I did meet several of the players that I played with in the City League during the war. His name, one of them was named Lou Ferrara. He's one of our surviving members of our championship team. There's only about four of us left, I think. Manager at that time was named Herb Harris. He took my name and address and everything and thought maybe I would like to come to California. And I didn't think no more about it until I got a letter from them the following early 48 to if I wanted to come to play at ball in Hanford, which I took up the offer, and that's how I met him again.
You must have been pretty good for them to want to bring you all the way from Pittsburgh to play for them.
Well, I don't know. Evidently somebody saw the ability I had, maybe, I don't know, but it turned out to be a plus for me, I wouldn't have had the wife that I have, and I wouldn't have the children that I have today if it wasn't for that. Who knows what would have happened?
Exactly. You beat me to the punch on that one. And I do want to illustrate for people that are of a younger generation, when they hear softball, they certainly think of women playing in college, and there are some women's professional leagues, or they think of the slow-pitch leagues that are in every town around here. But when you're talking about softball in the late 1940s, this is a much more competitive situation than rolling around in a slow-pitch league with the beer gut and guys who aren't that serious about it.
Yes, and you know, it's all right. It's more for recreation, just to get people involved, you know.
But you were serious.
Oh, I was darn serious about playing ball. Yes, 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 yes. I had a laugh one time. I took my son. He was, he's out there working on my car right now. But he was playing in a slow pitch league, and we brought our youngest grandson with us. I was going to watch him while we were watching the game. I was watching my grandson, so they were short a man, so they put me on a roster to play that night. And the only position I told him I would play would be catcher on a slow pitch team, because that's the easiest position to play. I wouldn't have to do any running. When it come time to bat, trying to hit the slow pitch, it don't come in fast enough. The timing is all off. So it's all right for a recreation league, but they take it serious too, which is good too. So that was fun.
But in your day, you guys were playing competitive fast pitch and at a world caliber level, which is proven by the world championship you eventually won. But it's after you move back to California and you're in Kings County, not far from Fresno, that you hear Bobby Thompson and the Giants are coming to Fresno?
Yeah, I heard they were having an exhibition game there, and I think they were staying at the old California Hotel at the time. And a friend of mine, we went up, took a drive. But once again, you didn't have a chance to talk to him very much because they were getting ready to go to the stadium to play the exhibition game. I'm not sure whether at that time it was the Fresno Cardinals or...
Would have been the Fresno Cardinals in 47, yeah.
That was the old California League at that time with Santa Barbara and Modesto and yeah. So that was it. That was the last time I talked to him in person, you know. Just a greeting. That's about all it amounted to, you know. So.
Well, that's all you need between old teammates sometimes. You don't have to have that many words. The look, the eye contact, the body language can say it all. And I don't want to get too chronologically out of order here because I want to ask you about 1951 and your interactions with Bobby Thompson more recently. But before 1951, you mentioned it. You wouldn't have met your bride if you hadn't moved back to California. So tell me how you met your wife, Dorothy, who you've been married to for 61 years.
We met, has to be at a local dance. They had Saturday night dances here in the Hanford Civic Auditorium, which were quite popular in those days. And I had met her during my service time. Where I was room and boarding at the time, there was a couple of young students still going to Hanford High School at that time. And I asked if they had any yearbooks around, and they did. They happened to have one that showed the year that my wife graduated Hanford High School. And I saw her picture in there, and I wondered whether she was still in town or whether she had been married. Of course, they didn't know her either. They didn't know her, the young lady, but as luck would have it, she was still single, and we made a connection. We started dating, just casual dating, until things got serious around the beginning of 48, when we decided that I gave her an engagement ring, and I surprised her with it, and then she accepted it, and we set a date for September of the 49.
And that's not the only reason that 49 was a good year for you. What'd you do just a couple weeks before you got married?
Well, we were the city of Hanford had a parade for their Hanford Kings softball team had won the world's tournament, and they paraded us through towns in open convertibles and went to the auditorium where we were all lined up and presented with wristwatches from the merchants in downtown. This at that time, softball was number one. There was no television, and there was what kind of entertainment would you ask for 50 cents or 25 cents entrance pay to get in to see a softball game? It was astronomical. I loved the town. I loved all the merchants in town, the people that were family-owned businesses. Whenever you needed something, if you couldn't find it, they'd get it for you. Not like today, when you go to a store, you have to help yourself, and that's it.
Well, and I have to ask you, when I think back to that time in San Joaquin Valley history, the year before, a 17-year-old from Tulare High School had won the Olympic decathlon, Bob Mathias. That was a huge deal around here. How big of a deal was it for the Hanford Kings to be world softball champions? Did you feel like, that you had won the World Series or the Super? There was no Super Bowl yet, but was it that kind of moment for Hanford?
I would have assumed that, because the way you saw the people in downtown when the parade was going on, it was, for a little town, this at that time the town limit was only city 1 mile square of the city limits, and you wonder where all these people came from, you know, and it was thrilling.
So I probably shouldn't ask you what was the bigger moment for you in 1949, huh? Winning the softball world title or marrying Dorothy?
Oh, you know it better, don't you? It has to be getting married.
She'd hurt you if you said otherwise, and she might hurt me for asking the question. But there are more questions to come. We're going to take our final break, and when we come back, we'll hear the final chapter to the story of Al's friendship with Bobby Thompson, his old Lemoore teammate in his Army Air Corps days, how they reconnected just within the last year, and why you might find Al's name in a book that you might want to pick up. We'll get the rest of Hometown Heroes after this. It's News Talk 580 KMJ.
Now, more Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Back to throws. There's a long pass. It's going to be, I believe. The Giants run the pellet. 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 Bobby Thompson hits into the very back of the left field stand. The Giants run the pellet, and they're going crazy.
Well, of course, that was the shot heard around the world, one of the most famous baseball moments ever. 1951, Bobby Thompson delivering the National League pennant to the New York Giants. Russ Hodges, of course, on that ever-present call. You can't be a baseball fan without having heard that a time or two. And I need to ask our guest today, Al Cutrazula, when you first heard that call, and when you first heard that your old Lemoore Army Air Corps baseball team buddy, Bobby Thompson, had hit the shot heard around the world.
You know, I didn't listen to the game, or I never got wind of it until it was mentioned over TV or radio at the time, and it to me, it was like it couldn't happen to a better guy because of the attitude that he had while he was playing ball with us amateurs compared to where he was standing, you know. So it was a blessing for him. I was glad. Where I was, I couldn't. I actually don't remember where I was at the time when he did hit the home run. I just heard it eventually over the air. That's all.
And it was exciting for you. You had met up with him a few years earlier when he was playing for the Giants, but from 1947, when you last saw him, until just this past year, you had no contact with him. And then you're reading your local Hanford Sentinel newspaper, and you see an ad in there that says what?
They were. This sports writer had an ad in the Hanford Sentinel asking for anybody who had played ball with or saw him play during his Army service days in the 44 and 45. His name was, author's name was Joshua Prager out of New York. So I called him as soon as my wife actually saw the ad. I didn't see it. And he asked me if I had any information about when he played and all that. I did have some write-ups. I had two write-ups with box scores in them. One of the teams we played against was the Roma Crushers. and one of that's Roma Wine, used to be in Fresno. The catcher, I think, at that time was Pete Biden. And he's the only name I recognize from coming back. And I finally met Pete later on and told him about that. And I had the clipping that time, and I showed Pete. And we were at a Hall of Fame induction in Fresno at the time. And in the book, it says there was a part that Bobby Thompson had problems with his sliding. And Pete remembers him asking him about some tips on how to slide, because
for those not familiar, Pete Biden was the Hall of Fame baseball coach at Fresno State. There's a statue of him. The field is named after him at Fresno State, Pete Biden Field. So he was a catcher who played against you guys, played against Bobby Thompson. But when the book and the writer you were talking about, the ad you answered, was for a book that's now out called Echoing Green by Joshua Prager. And in that book, it talks about Bobby Thompson having trouble sliding. And you know, because of talking to Pete Biden, that Pete Biden actually gave him tips on sliding?
That's true. That's what I didn't. Of course, I talked to Pete before the book was even out. And there was a mention in the book about trouble that he had sliding. And the two connected right there. So that was kind of interesting.
And I think there's a lot of guys listening that are familiar with Pete Biden that maybe even played for Pete Biden. And I'm sure they can envision how that went with Pete and his deep voice sharing those instructions with Bobby Thompson. The other thing that came out of this, it's not just that you are quoted in the book talking about Bobby Thompson. You actually, because of the author Joshua Prager, were able to get in touch with Bobby Thompson before he died. What was that like? What did you guys talk about, and how meaningful was that for you?
Well, he seemed like he wasn't, you know, he may have had problems hearing or something, and I knew I heard he had been ill, you know, but he did. According to the clipping he saw, he remembered a few of the guys because they were officers with him, you know, and he said he was still in touch with a couple of them, but as far as him mentioning he ever remembered me, well, I was low on a totem pole, I think, because I was the right fielder. I wasn't a good right fielder.
That must have been neat for you, though, and then especially when he died, and you realized how soon it was, you know, that you got to him just in time to kind of complete that circle for you.
Yeah, so I made connections with him through Joshua, the Prager, and he gave me his address too, so I could mail him a card, if, you know, if any time I wanted to. But it was not too long after that that he passed away. I was shocked because he was actually two years younger than I when we were at the Lemoore, so you could tell. You should know that he must have been a heck of a ball player at 20 years old and already being signed up in the minors.
So the last year of your life has been pretty exciting, huh?
Oh yeah, real exciting. I it just brought back a lot of memories. I had to go through scrapbooks and stuff that I never thought I'd ever give. I never assembled them yet, and they're still in. I had a big scrapbook years ago that I had stuff in there from my high school days through my military days that I loaned to a local sports bar owner. Lo and behold, he has the scrapbook with him in his van, and he went to the airport to go on a trip, and when he came back, the van was gone. Oh. And there went my 50 years of memories from my high school days, military pictures. Oh, crushed me.
But you still do have a couple of box scores. We'll go ahead and put some pictures of those on our website at kmjnow.com. We're on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and you can see what Al and his wife Dorothy look like after 61 years of marriage. Is there anything else that you want to say about Bobby Thompson? And even though your interaction with him was brief in Lemoore and brief after the war, you have that connection to one of the most historic homers ever. Having known him a little bit, is there anything that you would tell people who didn't know him, how you'll remember him for the rest of your life?
I'll just remember him as one of the greatest guys I ever met. He was a good example of what professional ball players should act like, how far they go into the sport or how long they last. He was a good example of what was good for baseball. That's all I got to say.
And we haven't talked that much about your own athletic accomplishments, but softball world championships, the International Softball Hall of Fame, bowling 300 games. What are you most proud of yourself with everything you've accomplished in competitive athletics?
I was always one that believed in doing the best that you possibly could be. And don't let anybody stand in the way of telling you how big or how small you are, or how heavy you are, or how thin you are, but you do what you gotta do, and that'll be the end for it. The end result will be, you can say I did my best.
Well, what a perfect way to bring this show to a close. Al did his best, and it's been a privilege hearing from him today. If you missed part of the show, you can listen to it again later, our podcast version at kmjnow.com. Al, thanks so much for serving our country during the war and for sharing some time with us.
Thank you for bringing us all attention to this old goat here.
Well, I didn't hear the goat story, but you sound like a pretty good ball player to me. Al Cutrazula, or Al Cotty, 88 years old of Hanford, California, has been our guest. We'll be back next week with another edition of Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.